guys. How's it going? This is Dave the Drummer, your awesome host. This is Uncle June's Junction, the official podcast for All Japan Worldwide Fan Group. I want to thank you folks for joining us. We have a very special episode in that we have a guest. We have a brand new guest. It is Manuel. He is an Italian Puroresu fan, and he is a part of Shields of Wrestling, the website, and he also is the host of What's Next, which is a podcast that is a part of the Shield of Wrestling. Is that right, Manuel?
Yeah, sure, that's right. And I'm thrilled to be right here on Uncle June's Junction.
Yes.
And it's difficult to say that, you know, because I'm Italian, and that's kind of a harsh word for us, saying Uncle June's Junction.
Right.
But, you know. No, that's a really great podcast. I've listened to some of the episodes, and that was really good. And now I know that that you have also interviewed Francesco Aguirre, and that's the Italian pride. And I'm so glad you got him.
I am too. You know, Akira, he's a nice guy, and he is working hard to build his career. And what better time to get to know somebody than when they're sort of at the bottom and they're starting to work their way up to the top? Because, I mean, if you ask me, he's only going to go to the top if he sticks around, if he stays with it. And, you know, he seems like he is. And so I can only see a really bright future for him. And that's going to lead to all sorts of things, because he'd be able to take all that, the matches and the tutelage and the experience, and take that worldwide. You know, Japan is probably the best place to go get your training done and to go get your basics done and to become the pro wrestler that you want to be, and then set out on the world and go and do your thing. I mean, guys like Benoit, you know, the name has kind of a black stain to it, a dark stain, if you will, a bad stain, I should say, you know, more clearly, but he had the right idea in that he wanted to go to Japan and go season himself in deep, immersive learning experience. And that's what he got. And that's what Akira is getting right now. He's getting a really deep experience, a very personal experience, training in the dojo with the All Japan rookies and being over there because of the COVID-19 circumstances. But he's making the most of it, and we're really happy to have him. So anyways, me and Emmanuel, we were just talking about the anniversaries, big anniversaries, this month. The first one is the passing anniversary of one of the greatest All Japan dojos graduates, wrestlers of all time, Mitsuhara Misawa, multiple time Triple Crown Heavyweight Champion, multiple time winner of Real World Tag League Champions Carnival, World Tag Team Champions multiple times over. He's done it all. He's been there. He's done that. And around, it was, I think we said today, right? Today is the anniversary of the founding of NOAH, right?
Yeah, right. Sure.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think that, you know, it's been 20 years. 20 years since NOAH first started. And if you're not a fan of the stuff around that time, the shift in the paradigm is simply huge. When this first happened, when the split first happened, excuse me for one second, I'm going to edit this out. when the Exodus first happened, it made such big tidal waves that things happened that a lot of people would not expect. We saw Tenryu come back to All Japan, which Giant Baba swore on his life would never happen. And we also saw All Japan and New Japan begin to co-promote. And that was something that we had not seen in 9 years. It was a long time. You know, we hadn't seen any cooperation between All Japan and New Japan. All of a sudden, now we've got All Japan and New Japan working together, doing some stuff together. And, I mean, that was huge. Huge event. And so, Mitsuhara Misawa passes away on the 13th. And NOAH is created on June 16th. And so those are some really, really, really big points of interest for the NOAH / All Japan wrestling fans, just because that split creates this whole different world of All Japan. You know, you have a huge gap with almost 80%, almost, I'd even say it's like 90% of the roster of All Japan, the Gaijins mostly included, take off to go form NOAA. They have their first cards at Differ Ariake, and a couple weeks later, and the rest is history. And NOAA, you know, right now is a lot of people are talking about NOAA. You know, they just got a couple of big guns from Wrestle One. Got your Kaz Hayashi. Yeah. They got their Manabu Soya. They got Seki Yoshioka.
Daichi Naba.
What was that?
Also Daichi Naba. Yeah, it was ready right there challenging Kaito Kiyomiya at the show. So I think that he went there.
Right. Yeah, and you know, it's a big event for NOAA, because NOAA is starting to rein in all these guys who used to work for Wrestle One, but they are part of the All Japan lineage too. And so it's interesting to see NOAA getting former All Japan guys again. You know, it's a very interesting dynamic. Although only Kaz and Soya are technically All Japan guys. Yoshioka, I don't think, made it past the dojo, because Yoshioka used to wrestle for, I want to say, WrestleGate. He used to be under a mask. He had a different gimmick and everything. And he announced that he was going to join the All Japan Dojo. He joins the All Japan Dojo and he starts working some stuff. Don't think he was under the mask at that point, but he ditches the mask. And when they all leave to Wrestle One is when Yoshioka really, his stock rises, because he's no longer an independent guy that is trying to eke his way up the ladder. He is a part of the roster, and so there's, you know, he has to prove something, but at the same time, the strain of having to demonstrate that you're not just an indie guy, but you're a good wrestler, it's got to be, you know, immense, and that you're trying to get a regular job, and regular jobs in pro wrestling in any country has got to be pretty difficult. And so, yeah, we had those two big events happen since our last taping. And we also we're talking with Manuel about what's going on in June for All Japan. So we saw that there's a card announced for the 19th, right?
Yeah.
But there's no matches listed. And so I'm kind of curious as to what's going to happen. Do you have any guesses on what do you think we're going to be seeing on the 19th match-wise? You want to take a shot in the dark?
That's weird, because, you know, in the 25th we have a number one contender title match. So that's kind of weird that in 19 we don't have a match. And I don't really know. I can do a prediction, because, you know, you don't have any match in the card, and to me it would be too difficult. So so I'm just right here standing at my home, expecting a B card for that event.
Yeah, for the 19th. Yeah, definitely. You know, one of our listeners, one of the folks in the All Japan Worldwide fan group is a big fan, Murray, and he has constantly talked to me about this, like the 19th, like where is the card? How come the card hasn't been announced? And so, you know, it sucks, because usually they don't play their cards so close to the chest. But I suppose in this instance, they're kind of, you know, doing that. And so we kind of just have to take a watch and wait, you know, standpoint. And so why don't we talk about what's been going on since our last recording event-wise? Well, so far, there's only been the special, what was it called? Okay, Menzore Bakai Chidai Superhuman Pursuit, and it was a singles match for the Wednesday special, and Black Menzore, who has had on a series of matches where he's essentially trying to make the rules where he can win no matter what, he still lost in this match. He he gets submitted by Shuji Ishikawa, who's one half of the World Tag Team / Double Cup Tag Team Champions. And that was on the 10th. And on the 17th, we're supposed to be having another Wednesday special. I believe it's going to be the Fight Club series of matches, which, if we haven't talked to you about, I'm pretty sure we did go over the rules last time in our last episode. But just to reiterate, All Japan put out a little description of some of just what is the Fight Club. And with the help of Google Translate, this is what it says. It says, with the ring of All Japan Professional Wrestling, young people of the future will eliminate the barriers of groups, collide with each other's body, and work hard to improve the young frontiers of the industry. As a result, it aims to revitalize the future professional wrestling world. Match format is 5 minutes, one game. If there is no settlement, overtime is allowed for 1 minute. Winning players will win. And the next time they will meet new opponents, if the match is not reached in extra time next time, two completely different players will make a singles match aiming to win. Now, thus far, Hokuto Omori has been successful in winning all his matches in the Fight Club, and he's turned back challenges from folks that were a part of 2AW, Tetsuya Hanami, awesome wrestler, and they just hooked up with Takuro Niki, who is a Wrestle 1 trainee. The next match is going to be Dan Tamura. Dan Tamura is going to take on Hokuto Omori. Now, let me ask you, Manuel, what do you think of Dan Tamura?
I think that he's good, you know, because I saw the documentary on the Old Japan TV, and he was like there with Francesco, with Yusuke Okada, with Hokuto Omori. And he trained very hard, so I'm kind of expect some not big things, but you know, medium things for him in the future, because I think that he trains a lot and he may be in the future really good.
Yeah, I think he's going to be something special as well. You know, I've been keeping my eye on him, and he's got a lot of spirit. He's got a lot of fire in him, and so I think if they can get him more experience, if it's possible, maybe get him a learning excursion to Canada or Mexico, somewhere that's going to do some real good for him. I think he's going to be one of the top guys of All Japan in the years to come. Now, let me ask your opinion. What do you think of Hokuto Omori in terms of, does he show a lot of progress compared to, Atsuki and Dan Tamura started about 2 months after Omori did. And so when you see those three wrestle, do you see a difference, like a marked difference between Omori and then like split between Omori and then Tamura and Atsuki, who are the contemporaries? Like, do you see like he's a bit more progressed than the others?
Yeah, I think that Hokuto Omori is really talented, and like in the movements, he's so smooth, and it's a thing that Dan Tamura doesn't have. So I think that in movements, Hokuto Omori is surely better than Dan. But in the future, you know, with training, with any type of stuff, with the type of eating, you know, because that comes to the things may be different, but right now I think that Omori is slightly better.
Yeah, I also think that he switched out of his trunks. Like, he was in silver trunks, and now he's got black trunks with writing on them. And he just recently, a couple of days back, he just challenged for his very first title, if I'm not mistaken. He got to challenge for the All Japan World Junior Heavyweight title over in Dragon's Gate. He wrestled in a three-way dance with Yosuke Santamaria, and also got to wrestle, obviously, Susumu Yokozuka, who is the defending champion. What is of noteworthiness is that Omori managed to pin Santamaria, and Santamaria has been around a couple more years than Omori. So, I mean, it's a big win over a veteran. It doesn't matter if it's a veteran of your own promotion, but I mean, you know, it's a big win for him. Now, Omori would go down. He would lose his title shot. But the fact of the matter is he definitely showed he could hang. He definitely showed that he could be on a championship caliber if he is to keep working the way he is, and if he keeps up his, you know, everything is just firing on all cylinders, he could be a World Junior Heavyweight Champion sooner than we know. And so that was really big.
Because also facing Susumu Yokozuka in Dragon Gate, it's like some really hot stuff, you know. It's a veteran, it's a legend of Dragon Gate, so it's really it's really great for Gamori.
Definitely shows that he is he's getting on that level where he is facing veterans more than he is facing fellow young guys, and that's definitely a good sign. I think they have a lot of confidence in Omori, and as we saw in the dojo video that we're going to talk about in a little bit, Omori is right in the thick of things. You know, he works just as hard as any other of the rookies, anybody else in the promotion. He works his butt off, and so I'd say collectively we're all big fans of Omori, and we see a big bright future for him, and so that is totally awesome. So let's go ahead and talk about the card on the 25th, since that is confirmed for what matches they've got on there so far. Let's go ahead and talk about that card.
Yeah, so we have in the main event, we have one of the most important matches in the last month. You know, Shotaro Hashino against Yuma Oyagi for the number one contendership. The winner faces Suwama. That's really cool, because in the last month, Shotaro Hashino is getting very, very big wins. You know, we saw a match in like a few weeks ago with Kuma Arashi, Les Enfants Terribles, against Kento and Francesco Aguirre, and was really good. And like, he blocked both with the ankle lock. You know, Francesco came, he blocked him with the ankle lock. Kento came, and then he let Francesco down and blocked Kento. So he's like really good, and All Japan has really big plans for him.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's so nice to hear somebody pronounce the stable name right, because I know I'm not, but I never claim to be very good at speaking foreign
yeah,
languages.
Because that's French, and I and we're in Europe, so that's kind of French is near to us, so we kind of speak French, so let's say that.
Right, and a good friend of the show and I have talked countless times about how there are parts of Italy where there are some folks that don't necessarily speak Italian predominantly. They speak different dialects, and I saw that blew my mind. Like, we were talking about Dino Bravo, and a lot of people don't know this, but Dino Bravo, he's of Italian descent. This whole time, I thought he was French-Canadian through it, and he is French-Canadian, but he's French-Canadian, he's like an Italian, yeah, he's an Italian-French-Canadian sort of deal, but I had no idea, and that totally blew my mind, you know?
Yeah, but I'm right here near Rome, you know? So in Rome, they talk all Rome stuff, you know, they have a specific dialect, and so they talk about that. They don't even talk Italian, so it's kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds a bit like that sounds a bit like America, where you have, you know, different parts of the country where they do speak English, but the English is like a marked difference. You know, if you go to the South, they use a lot more. They have a lot. I would say that the metaphors, things of that nature, they're much different. And sometimes you got draws where people can't understand what the heck they're saying. Like Cajuns, right? We have Cajuns over in like Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama around that Gulf Coast area. And there's some that their English is just like they're speaking English, but it's so thick that you're just like, man, I can't unpack everything, you know. But that's, you know, you got a country that's a melting pot, you know, and that's what's gonna happen. So let's talk a little bit more about the card on the 25th. So we talked about the main event, right? Yuma versus Hashino, and yes, it is a huge match. It's got huge ramifications. The winner of this match will go and face Suwama and the title crown, I'm sorry, the triple crown title match, and that's whoever we're going to get, it's going to be a damn good match, because Aoyagi can pull out matches really well with anybody, and Hashino has definitely shown that he can hang with all the All Japan guys, and he's shown that he belongs with them, and so that's going to be something to look at. But we do have some other matches that they've kind of been working on a bit. And the first, in the opener, we're going to see Koji Iwamoto and Hikaru Sato. they're going to team up, even though they're on different teams. Iwamoto is obviously with Jin, and Hikaru Sato is with Evolution. After the event before last, they united, they got together backstage, and they did a photo op, and they agreed they were going to start working together at the same time as Black Menzore and Yusuke Kodama, that freaky pair. they're going to go up against each other in a tag match, and I'm actually really looking forward to this, because all four of these guys can really work, and Black Menzore, he's so good at getting things over that people kind of forget that he could be a really good serious wrestler. I thought that the All-Asian Tag Title match that they had earlier this year with him teaming with Omori was fantastic. It definitely showed that Black Menzore can still reel folks in with his wrestling, not just the gimmick with all that sha stuff. I mean, you know, he got that over. Congratulations to him. You know, he's definitely one of the most over guys on the roster. But at the same time, I like him to show that he can still wrestle, and he's very technically sound, because he's a great wrestler. I don't know if you've ever watched his stuff in Osaka Pro when he was Tiger's Mask, or when he was in his heel era. He's dynamite worker, dynamite worker. Have you seen him at all in Osaka Pro before?
I've seen maybe a few matches, but you know, in Old Japan, he has a strange gimmick. We are Old Japan. We are the biggest promotion of wrestling in the world, of the planet. And you know, you see this guy with this black mask who says strange things, and I don't know. It's kind of weird seeing him with Yusuke Okada, or the other guys. So I don't know. He has a strange gimmick.
Well, let me go ahead and give you a little bit of background on the gimmick. So I'm mistaken in that I said he was with Osaka Pro. He actually started with so Okinawa Pro Wrestling was a breakaway group that Super Delphin launched to become a bit more closer to what he pictured Osaka Pro Wrestling becoming. And so Okinawa Pro, everybody had a specialized gimmick in the promotion. I don't think there was more than two or three guys that was working Osaka Pro or Okinawa Pro that you could see their face. Everybody had a mask gimmick. So his mask gimmick was he was Menzore, and he had a bowl of noodles on his head. That's what it's supposed to be. And yeah, he had a bowl of noodles on his head, and he was known for liking alcohol, right? That was sort of his big thing, was that he's associated with the alcohol and the ramen. And there may be a little more context to that, but because I am not Japanese, I'm not fully understand it. But that should be something we could look into in a future episode. Anyways, so that was sort of his gimmick. So when he comes back to All Japan in a new version of the gimmick in terms of Menzore returns, but he is Black Menzore, so he is the heel, quote unquote, evil version of this gimmick that he had in Okinawa Pro. It's actually he started wrestling in All Japan as Menzore, and then took the mask off, and that's when he officially signed with All Japan. But yeah, it's a character that was created in Okinawa Pro and brought over to All Japan, and that's what he's been using ever since. And yeah, it is a pretty freaky gimmick. It's very different from anything in the U.S., but in the U.S., a lot of people are adverse to masks. I was actually just listening to a podcast, and they're talking about the relevancy of masked wrestlers in pro wrestling from like the 60s to about the 90s. And so there's not a lot of talk besides Mr. Wrestling, guys like Mil Máscaras and Dos Caras. The Mexican wrestlers were coming over and working some dates in America at points, and so that they're the thing that people remember mask-wise, right? But then you have like NWA in the early 80s. You've got like the Black Scorpion, the James Gang. You have people just wearing masks as like a way of circumnavigating, oh, well, you can't wrestle this guy ever again. This guy's completely out of the title match. But the Midnight Rider, who is that same guy under a mask, you know. And so mask gimmicks in Japan are perceived very differently, I think, overall than in the U.S. You know, in the U.S., people who are under masks, they don't really, I guess, take them very seriously. Because if we stop to think about it, how many times has a major wrestling promotion decided they were going to go all in on, like, a masked wrestler? I mean, what, technically, a Kane, right? But I mean, I'd say he makes the mask more than the mask makes him. If that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, Kane, he made that mask work. Like, there's nobody else I think that could be as iconic working that mask than him. And so, good, you know, good ups to Kane. There's always an exception to the rule, but besides that, there hasn't been a wrestling promotion that put a lot of faith into masked wrestlers from, like, the 80s and 90s, maybe even, like, the late 70s, you know? The only real things I could think of are, like, the Patriot, right? The Patriot, this guy that worked in All Japan, right, as a gaijin. He worked WCW, he worked WWF. He's a pretty solid worker. But nobody really gave him a shot in the major scene, at least not for very long. He actually finds his way to WWF, and he is involved with a gimmick. Or he's involved with DX for like a short time, and that whole program just fizzles out. But that kind of leads back to my point. You know, Vince didn't know what to do with Vader. Vader's a masked guy, but I mean, you could pretty much see through his mask. But at the same time,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, he's like the last major guy in the U.S. besides, you know, Kane, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, that is sort of a big deal with masks. And so it would be interesting to see if anybody in this current age with a mask is going to be like as big of a star as, say, your Ligers, right? Your Ultimo Dragon, your Great Sasuke, because to my knowledge, there's only about maybe a dozen mass wrestlers in major promotions right now. And I'm including Noah, I'm including All Japan, I'm including New Japan, I'm including BJW 01. There's probably only about like a handful of wrestlers that, I mean, I don't include Dragon Gate, because Dragon Gate does have a fair amount of mass wrestlers in their promotion. But mass wrestlers just in general, you know, not really taken very seriously in America. As from what I understand, Tiger Mask was really huge in Italy. Are you familiar with the Tiger Mask anime that was showing way back when, or have you had your parents talk about it or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. That also an opening that was a classic right here, you know, so that song, we all know that song. And maybe talk about masked wrestler, but here in New Japan, we have Dragon Lee, and Dragon Lee is surely one of the most representative wrestler of the junior thing in New Japan. And in the US right now, we also have like Bandido in PWG that he won the last Battle of Los Angeles. So he kind of breaks that law that talks about masked wrestler cannot be that good, and he breaks the law.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just because a wrestler is masked does not mean that they are not like capable of being in the main event. Another one that it kind of escaped me was Rey Mysterio. And Rey Mysterio has definitely been pushed into the main event, but he's pushed almost immediately right back out. The biggest example I could think of was the fact that he won that tournament to win the World Heavyweight Championship, and they couldn't give the guy a day. It's like he won it, and then John Cena beat him for it that night. And I'm pretty sure right after that, he was right back in the mid-card. And so, I mean, I don't know about a good amount of you folks that are listening, but to me, Ray could have easily been a top tier guy if he was about the size of Eddie, you know. But Ray has got about three or four inches below Eddie, Benoit, you know, even Dean Malenko, you know, he's shorter than them. Yeah. If it wasn't for that, I'd say Ray probably would have been an even more successful top singles guy in the WWE, maybe not in WCW, but definitely WWE. He would have been on top a bit longer, I feel, and definitely would have been a part of the main event scene a bit more.
You know, WWE's booking is really weird and it's full of bullshit, so the stuff goes by itself.
Yeah, absolutely. We're big fans of the Japanese stuff because the WWE, it's just, man, you know, just start throwing all kinds of ideas and let's see what sticks to the wall is pretty much, I think, what they've pretty much been doing for God knows how long. God knows how long. So anyways, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more with Manuel, our awesome new friend. This is Uncle June's Junction, the official podcast of All Japan Worldwide Fan Group. Please enjoy the selection of music. We'll be right back. Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Folks, we are back. We are back. We are back. So we are here with our friend Manuel. We are talking about All Japan Pro Wrestling. We're talking about, you know, our conversation's kind of, you know, sign-wide here and there between different promotions. And this is good. You know, we need these kind of talks, you know, because even though we love All Japan and All Japan is, you know, is wunderbar, you know, there are wrestling promotions outside of All Japan. We have no problem talking about them as long as the relevancy is fairly there with relations to All Japan. And sometimes we do take a sidestep here and there, but we pull it back in. You know, we are the anti WWE in that we completely acknowledge any wrestling promotion outside of All Japan, willing to talk about them and their title history and their lineage, as opposed to that senile old fuck. So we were talking about the event on the 25th, and let's go ahead and finish rounding that out, and then we can talk about this awesome interview that our friend, our mutual friend, Francesco Akita, produced himself. And so let's get to the rest of the card. So as we talked about the main event, Aoyagi versus Ishino, Triple Crown contenders match, right? That's a big one. We talked about the opener, which is Iwamoto and Sato teaming up against Black Benzore and Yusuke Kodama. The second match on that card announced, we should mention that this is the card that's announced so far. So something could change. They could add something. We're on the 16th of today recording. So we got 9 days to go. Anything could change. So on the second match, we've got Evolution. And they are going up against, well, I should say what combination of Evolution. That might help. It is the combination of Suwama, Shuji Ishikawa, and Yusuke Okada, the rookie for Evolution, going up against Kento, Jiro, and Francesco Akita. We were just talking about him right now. Now, this is we have matches that display the what All Japan, what the current All Japan product is. And while we do have these other matches on the card, I feel like this match is going to be something special and display just what is the All Japan picture look like right now, because all six of these guys, even though supposedly Jiro is going to be leaving to the U.S. as soon as everything is cleared up and travel between the two countries, everything is kind of worked out in that sense. But for the time being, this, you know, it's a good thing that Jiro is around. He's helping out All Japan. It's good stuff. So the six of these guys are going to have, I think, a fantastic match. They might even steal the show just because you've got six of the best workers in the country right now. And we're including Akira in that because he's busting his butt. He's working hard and his stuff looks clean. Yeah. You know, he's in good hands. That's very important that if he wants a future, he's in good hands with people that are going to guide him and mold him into something that any promotion around the world would look and go, I want that guy. Like, I want that guy for 6 months. I want that guy to be my champion. I want that guy to work a program with, like, my top guy. You know, I think he's going to go for it, you know? And then finally, I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's, like, so smooth, you know? You know what? It kind of reminds me, like, the first Prince David. You know, that tope con hilo, that sling blade, that double foot stomp. It's like Prince David, and it's really great.
Yeah, David is somebody that definitely, when he came onto the scene, he wasn't just wrestling for the sake of building experience. He was basically, the way I view Devitt is that his wrestling wasn't just the kind of wrestling that entertains. You go and you say, okay, what is so special about pro wrestling? You show me, right? Like it's like a dare. Like, you show me why I should watch your wrestling, right? And he's a great talented guy. He's a great talented Irish wrestler, and he's been over. He's worked some dates in the U.S. He's worked some dates and primarily around his native, you know, the U.K. But I know that he definitely got a chance to go and do some work outside of the country. And he gets noticed, and he goes over, and he starts working with New Japan. He gets over there, and he's a fantastic wrestler. But the thing of it is that when you're watching him, you can't stop watching him, you know? And Akira is definitely getting to that. He's getting to that area where his wrestling isn't just like, man, he's such a great wrestler. He's like, I want to show you this pro wrestling that you can't take your eyes off of, right? And the Devitt, he did a fantastic job of that. When he breaks away from CTU, when CTU falls apart and he's no longer a part of the group, he's got to go out on his own and earn that success. And he's the perfect chaser. And I cannot remember what year it is, but I think it's 2007 or maybe 2008. He's not only in the best of the Super Juniors, but he's also a part of the Tenkaichi Junior Tournament over in 01. And he makes it all the way to the finals in both, and he loses them. But those matches, you just cannot take your eyes off of what he's doing, because it's not only super quick and you blink and you miss it, but it's just, man, you know, it's super clean. He's not hurting anybody. He's not hurting himself. It's like, you know, it's about as close to a comic book or an anime as you get in real life, just because these guys are really just going out there and just busting their hump, and they're making it look like beautiful, working their art, becoming masters of the craft. And we're seeing it like live. Well, I wouldn't say live, but we're getting to see them become the masters of their craft. And so it's fantastic stuff. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
There we go. Sorry. yes. So that does it for the card on the 25th. You know, we're looking forward to that. Most other promotions by now are starting to get their plans together, and they're starting to execute. New Japan has started rolling their shows again. They're starting to do shows again. They were one of the last major holdouts to not run shows. So everybody is beginning to start to run shows, but not with crowds. Everybody is trying their best to make sure that before the crowds get back into the mix of things, they want to make sure it's nice and safe and nobody is able to, you know, get in there and recontaminate, you know. And I'm very, very happy that they're taking their time. They're taking all the precautions they can before they go out there, and they're just, yeah, let's start getting the crowds back in there, you know. I kind of feel like if it was over here in the U.S., they wouldn't be so, cautious, and they wouldn't be so, you know, concerned, because I don't know if you've been hearing, but I've been hearing all these horror stories about what that crazy old senile mofo Vince is doing to his, you know, his employees. And I just read something today. I hope to God it's not true, but I'm starting to think it is that Vince is like, no masks. If you wear a mask on TV, you're getting sent home. So I think that's incredibly tasteless, but what do I know? I'm not a rich billionaire who's in my 70s who, you know, but I, you know, so I'm really glad that All Japan and New Japan, Noah, BJW, Dragon's Gate, DDT, they're all taking their time and slowly working the crowds back into the shows. So we were very fortunate enough, myself and Manuel, to talk to Francesco Akira before he went and put out this awesome documentary called This is the All Japan Dojo, or what is it called?
Yeah, this is AJPW Dojo, like that thing. But, you know, I saw that, and Francesco was really good. You know, the training was hard, and he busts his ass all the time. And like, to finish the training, they got like 3,000 of squats. That's crazy. I could never do that, but, you know. And then he also studies the language, because they show you that he studies now Japanese and he's getting real good talking about it. And if you if you go on his Instagram profile, you can see also that in his stories, he even watches wrestling. He watches great wrestling. That some kind of stories, you know, that Kento against Mago Fuji, that Champions Carnival match that was so good, and the Kento Mago Fuji with the title in line. So, yeah, he's really great, talented, and he wants to improve himself. And it's, I don't know, he's getting better day by day. So, I'm out of words. I'm speechless talking about him because he's really good and he's getting better and better day by day.
Yeah, he really is becoming something special. And that's why I mentioned, you know, we're so happy to be able to not only watch him, but able to talk with him and basically be exposed to him while he is still kind of growing and learning as a student of the pro wrestling game. And as he becomes a master, we're going to be able to go back and go, man, remember when we interviewed him a couple of years ago, and now he's just like blowing up. He's this, he's that, you know, it's going to be a nice time capsule for when he blows up, you know, and it's, I think it's only a matter of time, you know, before he becomes like a real big deal, not just in Japan, but, you know, worldwide. You know, I mean, he's already got Italy and Japan, you know, cheering for him. So, I mean, that's a good start, I'd say.
But we're the Shield of Wrestling. We have another podcast, you know, that's called Over the Top Rope, and it's for the Italian professional wrestling. And in 2017, he got his first interview. So let's say that we believed in him. Let's say that.
Well, you guys backed the right horse because he got noticed by somebody like Tajiri, who is a super world famous pro wrestler. You know, he's gone around, he's traveled, he's been to Mexico, he's been to the UK, he's been to, I think he's even, he's wrestled for Pro Wrestling Malta, which is around Italy, and I think he has wrestled in Italy before too. But the point is that, you know, you get noticed by Tajiri, and Tajiri throws you the invite, says, hey, come and wrestle in All Japan, come and train with us. That's a huge compliment.
Yeah, because in the documentary also Tajiri says he's like very lucky to get right here in this dojo, because right here in Italy we don't have some great structures to train yourself. So that's really great for Francisco. And like that, I think that is going really, really far in this business.
Tajiri mentioned in the interview, the documentary, that he did not have a formal place to go and train at. And so he was having to go and find his training just in different places all around Japan, and then found that, you know, Mexico was a bit more ideal of a learning environment for him to go. And so he would go and do that. But funny thing is that he, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he is a Hamaguchi Dojo guy. And that is very interesting because he's a part of this great lineage that a lot of people don't really talk about too much, in that the Hamaguchi Dojo, or the Hamaguchi Gym, right, is someplace where it's mostly meant for like lifting, right? Like power, yeah. Animal Hamaguchi, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. Animal Hamaguchi is a former pro wrestler. He spent a good chunk of his time in New Japan, All Japan. He also did some work in War. I want to say a little bit of SWS, but I think he worked a little bit more War, because he had retired for X amount of years, but then stepped back in, especially when Choshu was working War, not as a regular guy, but as a part timer that was around a good amount. So, Tajiri, he starts off in the Hamaguchi Dojo, Hamaguchi Gym, excuse me, and that is primarily where wrestlers go to condition and would work out, and it's mostly about strength training and lifting. But a lot of guys also begin to start working pro wrestling stuff. They don't even have a ring. They have mats. that have mats. And so guys like Tajiri, they're wrestling, they're learning wrestling on mats as opposed to a ring. And this is in the mid to early 90s. And so you got guys like Kojima, right, and Takao Mori, yeah, right, who are Hamaguchi Gym, like they graduate, right? And there's this huge lineage about it. It's kind of hard to track down through English sources, but there are Japanese sources where if you translate it, there's like a full list of all the graduates. And we're talking guys from the last 20, 30 years of pro wrestling are all graduates of this. I want to say Michiyoshi Ohara is the first one. It might be Goto. I forget which one of the two. But, you know, you got guys like right now. Like who is a product of the Hamaguchi Gym right now is what you would ask me. And I will tell you. Shingo Takagi. Okay, Shingo Takagi, who wrestled in the 2018 Champions Carnival and who gave me the match of the year that year, right? The Champions Carnival. He is a Hamaguchi Dojo graduate, right? Right? Bushi, Shingo Takagi, right, are all graduates of the Hamaguchi Dojo, or the Hamaguchi Gym. So, I mean, that there's some pretty good lineage all coming out of there. But Tajiri gets his start from there. Tajiri begins to learn the inner workings of pro wrestling there. But like you said in the interview, you know, there's no real stable place to go and train, so he has to go to Mexico. And that's probably why he's helping out Akita, is because he's like, you know, yo, you know, I can see Italy doesn't really have the facilities to make you like the best of the best, but Japan does. So maybe you should go over there. And he's found a steady home and where he can train and can grow as a pro wrestler. So, you know, that's big ups to him, you know. But the interview, the documentary is very special in that we get a super in-depth look on the life of a trainee and very in-depth because we get to see him making the chanko, right, which is a sumo food. We talked about that last episode. He talked about it. I let him explain the whole thing with chanko and making it, the culture behind it. He tells me that he gets to work with Dan Tamura with making the chanko, and we get to see that in the interview. And so that's really awesome that we get to see the culture. And as you explained, you know, we get to see how much they go through in the training, you know, at the very end, they got to do their 1,000 squats. Then they got to do the sumo squat before they get to leave for the rest of the day. And so we're getting an in-depth look on what it is to be not just a member of the dojo training and learning, but him as a person. We get to see him as he's learning Japanese, as he's getting acclimated to being in a foreign country for a time a bit longer than what he expected, I'm sure. As I mentioned, he's making the most of the situation. You know, those people in the dojo are probably like brothers to him now. And so it's good to be around people that you care about and they care about you, and you guys are all basically in the trenches together. And so it was really awesome that we got to see not just a perspective of somebody in the dojo, but we got to see about him. You know, he talks a lot about his growth and himself and what he's had to go through to get to where he's at now in the year or so that he's spent off and on wrestling in Japan. I think he said it was his third tour. And so that's pretty good. I you're asked back three tours from all Japan. I would say that's definitely a good sign. And we, you know, I was elated when we're getting to see all this stuff that a lot of people either don't care to go and learn about, or some folks just had to learn visually because there've been videos released, obviously, of what it is to go through the training and to, you know, experience what it is to be in the dojo. We've seen lots of videos of that. We've seen videos of it. I don't know about a lot, but I'm sure there's a lot out there. But the point is that we've seen these videos, but we've never had them in such detail for non-Japanese speakers, right? And so it was big of Akita, right, Francesco Akita, to make sure that it was something that could more universally be, people could dig it, you know, because if it, I have a feel, I feel that if it was just in Italian and Japanese, it sort of narrows down who you're trying to get this across to. But English is a bit more universal. And so anybody from, you know, from San Francisco all the way to, let's say, Papua New Guinea would be able to watch this interview, and a good amount of folks would be able to understand it and really get the most out of it, the message that Akita is trying to send across with this documentary. And it's the first of its kind. You know, there have been a couple of non-Japanese wrestlers that have come out of the All Japan Dojo, and we're working on trying to talk to some of them, because as awesome as this is, I'm sure a lot of listeners out there would dig it if we get to talk to some folks that got to spend time in the dojo, with the guys like Baba, Tsuruta, you know, the guys that really kind of they created the four pillars, you know, they created All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 90s, which is just this image of like wrestling perfection, you know, for a lot of people. And so it is awesome that we got this so in depth, so clear across, that we didn't have to just watch the video and kind of make out what's being said. I mean, we get the full brunt of things, and at times we even see some of the Japanese wrestlers using English to get across over to Akita. And so that's really good that they're trying really hard to, you know, get him to a level of comfort where he can understand them and they can understand him, and everybody is working on this great level where there's enough communication between himself and the rest of the guys to where everything works, everything flows. And as we've seen in the video, he is right in the mix of things. Akita is definitely right in the thick of everything. You know, he's right there. He's doing everything that they're doing. He's eating what they're eating. He's living and experiencing the dojo life just like they are. You know, it's a beautiful thing if you really think about it, that you have a dojo, that a system that doesn't care so much about race, doesn't care so much about color, so much as the spirit and the heart that you have for pro wrestling, for training, for becoming the best that you can be. And that to me is a very welcome message, you know.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful thing. And right now, yeah, getting global, your product is such an important aspect. So I'm really glad All Japan took this chance and go there with Francesco and with this big documentary, because it is important. This is very important. So I'm really glad All Japan made this choice.
Yeah, I am too. You know, because if it had been anybody else, we don't know if they'd have gone through this much trouble to produce a English language documentary about somebody's life while they're living in Japan abroad during this, you know, the COVID-19 thing. And he's, you know, like I said, he's making the most of it. He's training, he's working his butt off. He showed that he's putting on some muscle. So congrats to him. I know that can be difficult for some wrestlers, you know, but if you just keep at it, you keep eating your chonko, you say your prayers and you eat your vitamins, brother, everything will go out right.
Yeah, and the documentary also says that has rice coming out of his eyes over years. So that's kind of great.
Right. Yeah. I do remember him talking about just eating just like lots and lots of rice. And it's really interesting to hear about what wrestlers go and they start eating a whole bunch of so that they can bulk up. You know, I think it's Umehara. I forget. There's a New Japan rookie. I forget which one it is in particular right now, but I overheard, I read something the other day where he's been eating like a bunch of eggs ever since every day. He's eating like a ton of eggs on like a daily basis ever since the lockdown started. And so I'm just like, man, you know, I forget how many eggs he was having a day, but it was freaking huge. I don't know if it was like 20 eggs. I think it was somewhere around there, but like, damn, that's a lot.
that does it for the first part of our interview with Manuel. We want to say thank you for him joining us on the show. As you heard, you can check out his website, Shields of Wrestling, and we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking about the rest of the events that were happening in June and the results. This is Uncle June's Junction. Special thank you to our guest Emmanuel for joining us, and we are always glad to have brand new guests come over and talk shop with us, talk All Japan with us. It's a real treat. We've had people from various other different podcasts and co-promoting, and it's awesome. You know, it's a great way to build positivity in a wrestling community, internet wrestling community. You know, we see so much negativity and toxicity, and it's a nice change to see people be able to get along and co-mingle, you know, with relative ease. So let's go ahead and get back on track with what's going on in late June as far as All Japan is concerned. So when we last left off, we were talking about, if I'm not mistaken, we were talking about one of the Wednesday specials, which was that, Shuji Ishikawa, he went up against Black Renzo Rey in the first generation Superhuman Investigation Edition style of match, kind of entertainment match to, kind of keep things going in terms of bringing content to All Japan fans. And Shuji Ishikawa, he submitted Black Renzo Rey in under 5 minutes, just about under 5 minutes. Again, Black Renzo Rey trying to get the upper hand on some of the All Japan wrestlers, and it just never really seems to work. We move on to the very next thing, which was a week later. We had a Wednesday special. We had Hokuto Omori go up against Dan Tamura in a 5-minute draw, and they managed to also get into that 1-minute time limit for the overtime. And so we're going to have two new opponents whenever we have a new Wednesday special, the Fight Club, happening. We have not had one, and we are recording this as of, I believe it's like late June. So we haven't had a new one since then. And so we move on to the 19th, which was the Turning Point show. And a couple of things of note were the opener saw Kuma Arashi beat Dan Tamura in a little over 2 minutes. Kuma Arashi, a part of Enfance Terrible, that are running roughshod over All Japan. They are kicking butt and taking names, and they've been very successful so far in their arrival in All Japan. The next match saw Black Renzo Rey and Yusuke Kodama, that strange union there, that strange tag team, go up against Hokuto Omori and Atsuki Aoyagi. You would see Aoyagi take the loss here. Renzo Rey gets the pin with the jackknife hold in a little under 7 minutes. Moving on to the next match, saw Kento and Francesco Akira, one of our good friends of the show. He tagged up with Kento in a big win against Triple Crown champion Suwama and Yusuke Okada, who is, he is the rookie. He is the young boy for Evolution. You would see Miyahara get the win with a German suplex hold at 10 minutes, a little over 10 minutes, getting the win over Okada. Moving on to the next match, we saw Yoshitatsu getting the win over Zeus and Izanagi of Purple Haze. Love that name. Teaming up with Seigo Tachibana, who is recently arrived just a couple of weeks ago from Wrestle 1. Yoshitatsu gets the win in a little under 12 minutes with the Yoshitatsu Rhapsody, getting that tap out on Izanagi. So we move on to the 24th, another Wednesday special. We saw Black Renzo Rey again try to get the upper hand on somebody. Did not work out the way he thinks it does. This time he was facing Suwama, and he gets dunked on his head like they all do. And in about 3 minutes with the backdrop, I mean, the backdrop. Suwama has the backdrop in All Japan. You could say Jake has it, but I still think Suwama's kind of hits a little harder. So we move on to the Turning Point show on 6/28. And some things of note are the two matches that we saw. Yoshitatsu and Seigo Tachibana successful again against Purple Haze. This time it gets Zeus and Udamaro. Yoshitatsu gets the tap out with the Yoshitatsu Fantasy on Udamaro in a little under 9 minutes. Also, we saw Kuma Arashi team up with his Enfance Terrible teammate Yusuke Okadama. They get a big win over Jin's Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto when Arashi uses the Diving Senton in a little over 13 minutes. We move on to the big show, which is the show on the 30th, broadcast number 8, still being filmed over at Chiba 2A Square. We saw the Asunaro Cup resume. We saw Dan Tamura get a win over the winless the younger Aoyagi brother. Tamura would get the win with the modified Texas Cloverleaf hold, which we would begin to start seeing Tamura use more and more as time goes on, but we'll talk about that in the next episode or two. So we also saw Okuto Omori get 2 points over Rising Hayato, who is from EPW, with the German suplex hold in 8.5 minutes, just about. We move on to the next match. Zeus and Udamaro get a big, I would say, a much-needed win for Purple Haze. They get the win over Takao Mori and Black Menzore. We see Zeus with the jackhammer get the victory over Black Menzore, 6.5 minutes, 6:31. We see Yoshitatsu and Seigo Tachibana get a big win over Yuma, Aoyagi, and Tajiri, this new team forming up. It's a big win for Yoshitatsu. He's on a roll. He's been tapping out people left and right with this new tag partner, moving away seemingly from that team that he had so long with Kento. Yoshitatsu actually tapping out Tajiri in this match, surprisingly. I would have thought Yuma might, you know, he's kind of lingering right now. He might have taken the loss, but he did not. So the next match, we saw Kento, Jiro, and Francesco Akira, who are beginning to form this little union, this unit team, going up against Evolution's Yusuke Okada and Hikaru Sato, along with Shuji Ishikawa, the all-star team of Miyahara, Jiro, and Francesco get the win when Kento uses German suplex hold on Okada in a little under 11 minutes. We saw the junior heavyweight title contendership be, they finally figured out who's going to go and challenge Suzumu Yokosuka, who is he's with Dragon Gate. He's been the title holder since the beginning of the year, essentially. And we saw Iwamoto get the win over Kodama a little under 13 minutes with the Koko no Gejetsu, that awesome, beautiful judo throw that he's got. So Koji is going to challenge in the next month for the junior heavyweight, the world junior heavyweight title. Jake Lee goes and gets I would definitely say a much needed win in the singles column for himself, for Jin. He beats Kuma Arashi with his backdrop suplex at a little under 8.5 minutes. Pretty solid match. I would definitely say I'd go out of my way to watch it. The main event saw Shotaro Ashino, this guy who has been petitioning Suwama for a shot at the Triple Crown and has definitely racked up some wins and has warranted taking a look at Suwama, gives him that shot. Suwama puts him away in a really, really, really fun, if you know these two guys, you know the kind of match that they're capable of, and I feel like they can do better, but I definitely think this was a good match, and it's something that is just, it's the beginning. This is like the tippy top, you know, or this is just the beginning. You know, we're just seeing the beginning of their interactions. And so Suwama gets the win with the last ride in just a hair under 28 minutes. And that closed up that show on the 30th. But we also had one more. Oh, no, I got that right. Yep, I got that right. Awesome. Okay, so that is going to do it for the shows for June. And again, we want to say thank you to Manuel for joining us. We will be back with a new episode that entirely covers all of July. We kind of meant to do a little bit of early July in with June, but I kind of felt maybe it was a better idea to just do June. So we're going to cut it off with June. We're going to focus on a whole episode for July, and that's that. So we want to thank you folks for joining us. Again, this is All Japan Worldwide Fan Group's English commentary. I'm sorry, All Japan Worldwide Fan Group's official podcast, Uncle June's Junction. Thank you for joining us. We will be back with a brand new episode. Until then, take care. God bless. Godspeed. Stay vigilant with being sanitary and social distancing. Wear a mask. Make sure that you're being clean and that you're limiting who you're being around and how much you're going out. But most importantly, be smart. Be educated about this thing. Get out there and learn about how easy this thing can, you know, really and can really get into the very fibers of the things that make up our society. So until then, till the next episode, Blue Justice.